So B'chukosai begins, I'm going to focus on the first pasuk of B'chukosai. So what does it say? It says, in B'chukosai telechem, if you go in my decrees, that's what it means, B'chukosai on my decrees, if you follow, if you walk in my decrees, ves mitzvosai tishmoru, and my commandments you observe, then, got a ton of few pages. You'll see why in a second. Got a ton, a lot of pages over here in this particular volume. Sorry. Look. I'm doing this on purpose. I'm turning all these pages, and I'll explain why in a second. Okay. So it says, es mitzvosai tishmeru, and you'll observe my mitzvahs, vasisimusam, and perform them. Then, nosati gishmechem b'itam, then I will put your rain in their proper time. V'nosna ha'aretz yevula, v'etzasad yitin pirio, and the land will produce its produce. V'etzasad yitin pirio, and the trees will produce its fruit. So this is the beginning of the blessing. If you follow my mitzvahs, essentially, if you walk in my statutes, you walk in my laws, my commandments you observe, and you also perform them, then only blessing will come. It's a beautiful assurance. Beautiful bracha. So Rashi says, quoting Toras Kahanim, Rashi says, Yochol Eilu mitzvahs. What does it mean? B'chukosai telecho, if you'll walk in my commandments, you'll walk in my statutes. A person may think, Eilu mitzvahs, these are referring to the mitzvahs. You follow the mitzvahs. That's the simple pshat, the simple meaning of the verse. If you follow my commandments, in b'chukosai telecho, if you walk in my laws, so rightfully a person would say, this is referring to Kiyum ha-mitzvahs, fulfillment of mitzvahs. But it can't mean that, says Rashi, because the pasuk goes on to say, ves mitzvosai tishmeru, and my mitzvahs you observe. So it would be repetitive. If my statutes, my laws you walk in, and my commandments you observe, it mean the same thing, it's repetitive. So since it already says, my commandments you observe, it must be that chukosai means something different. Hakim mitzvahs amo, fulfillment of mitzvahs has already been said. So ha ma ani mekayim. So what do I do then with the phrase in chukosai telechu, if you walk in my laws? And the answer is shatiyu amelim b'torah. What it means is one has to be amel in Torah. One has to toil in the pursuit and the study of Torah. So this is a very famous interpretation of this phrase in B'chukosai Telecho. It's an injunction to toil in the studying of Torah, not in the performance of Torah, but toil in the studying of Torah. Amelis b'Torah. And then the next phrase goes on, Mitzvosai Tishmeru, if you'll observe my commandments, Havei Amelim b'Torah al menas lishma v'lakayim, you should be amel, you should toil and exert yourself in the learning of Torah in order to, on the condition to observe them as well, because it's not enough just to be amal in Torah, obviously, to study Torah with a lot of energy and enthusiasm. It's got to translate into action as well. And that's why the pasuk says, and my mitzvahs you observe, and you do them as well. So it's a package deal, learning and doing. But in the learning has to be more than casual, passive learning, but also learning with toil, with energy. The truth is that we spoke about this a few weeks ago, and I was learning with someone yesterday, that the learning with intensity is actually akin to how the Torah was given at Mount Sinai. Because the Torah was given at Mount Sinai with intensity. There was thunder, there was lightning, there was a smoke over the mountain. The sound of the shofar was heard. So the whole atmosphere of Maimon Har Sinai was an atmosphere of intensity, of seriousness and intensity. The people were imbued with a tremendous feeling of intensity, and they were terrified and trembling. So the Gemara says that that's how Torah has to be learned as well. We have to learn in the same way. Not that you have to scare people and be scared but it resembles intensity. So when a person learns with intensity, that's more akin to how the Torah was given at Sinai with intensity. So a melis in Torah, toiling in the studying of Torah, is the ideal way to learn, right? When a person toils, they put out effort, they're energetic in the process, and that means energetic in the analysis, toiling in the understanding, and not sitting passively and not thinking. It's using the mind, it's using the energy to understand. That's called a melis b'Torah. And that's what it says, b'chukosai telecho, on the surface, it doesn't say that. That this is the interpretation of the Medrash, which Rashi is quoting. It's referring to a melis, and a melis means toiling, putting out effort in the learning. But that's the admonition, that's the warning, or that's the commandment which the parasha begins with. So that's Rashi from the Medrash on the Pasuk. So I want to explore a commentary by the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim, his name was Rabbi Chaim ben Attar, and he was born in Morocco in 1696, right? And he only lived for 47 years. He passed away in Israel. A very, very famous commentary. He's one of the famous commentaries which are found in the major Chumashim, in all the commentaries of the Chumashim. And I stumbled across this. Yes, I was listening to a shir, and this rabbi was mentioning this, was talking about this particular comment. So I thought I would like to share it. But also, I spoke about the Or HaChaim also on Tuesday in the class about Lag BaOmer, because whoever came to the class about Lag BaOmer on Tuesday, so I'd mentioned that the Or HaChaim, his name is the Or HaChaim, his name is Rabbi Chaim ben Attar. But Or HaChaim means the light of life, because that's the name of his commentary, the light of life, his commentary. So he was, I mentioned him on Tuesday in the Lag BaOmer class, because because there was a report that people saw him on Lag BaOmer in Maron, climbing, like walking up on his hands and knees, walking up to the bonfire, to the Tzion, to the monument of Shem Bar Yochai, the great author of the Zohar, who's buried in Meron. So the Or HaChaim was crawling on his hands and knees to get to this holy, holy spot. And he put garments inside the fire, the bonfire of Lag BaOmer. This is what we spoke about on Tuesday, about bonfires on Lag BaOmer. And there was this ancient tradition of putting clothing and expensive clothes inside the bonfire in Lag BaOmer. And it's a very mysterious thing. And the Or HaChaim did this. People attested the fact that they saw the Or HaChaim putting expensive clothing inside the bonfire of Lag BaOmer. So this raised the question, are you allowed to burn things and destroy clothing? And that was the class on Tuesday, you know, wanton waste. So if you want to hear that, you have to listen to on Torah Anytime, will be on there as well. So he was on my mind this week, the Or HaChaim. So he was a great Kabbalist. He was a tremendous Talmudist, and he was a Kabbalist. He was a very holy man. He was a wealthy man as well. He was a craftsman skilled in weaving strands of gold. That's apparently what he did. And he was, again, born in Morocco in 1696, 2 years before the birth of the Baal Shem Tov. But he passed away. He eventually made his way to Israel, and he passed away in 1743 at the age of 47. But in that short lifetime, he accomplished tremendous amount. He wrote this commentary on the Chumash and other works as well. And his famous student was the Chidah, Yosef Chaim Azulai, that was his name, the Chidah. And he also established a shul in the old city called the Or HaChaim Shul, which you can go to. It was actually destroyed by the Jordanians in the 60s or something, but it was restored again. But the shul is the Or HaChaim shul in the old city. You can actually go over there. So he was a great individual and a very holy man. So I was turning all the pages. This is a copy of the commentary of the Or HaChaim. So I was turning all these pages over there. You know why? Ready? He has 42 commentaries on this first pasuk.
Oh, wow.
42. That's why I kept turning the pages. 42 commentaries on this first pasuk. I think it's just on the first phrase. I didn't go through all of them. 42 commentaries on B'chukosai Telecha. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
42? Just on one phrase. So what's the backdrop? What's the behind the scenes of this comedy? Why 42? And how did this come to be? So this is a story which is quoted. It's passed down through generations and through very reliable sources. So the backstory of the 42 commentaries is that when he was living in Morocco, so again, he was a wealthy man, and he had tremendous respect, and he was a Torah scholar himself, but he wanted to make sure that the Torah scholars in his town, in his village, were looked after, and people, and he was there, they had all that they needed, and he was a shochet as well. And he would always make sure that the Torah scholars, the Talmid Chacham in the town, would always have meat for Shabbos and bread for Shabbos. Mm. He always ensured there was meat for Shabbos for these Torah scholars. So he was a shochet. He used to buy a bull or cow every week, and he would shecht it himself, and he would cut it up and give out the meat to the Torah scholars of the village. So there was one particular Erev Shabbos that, he had his cow, he shechted it, and he was giving it out, piece of meat. But in the village, it was a small village, and I guess there was, a limited supply of meat in general, and there were no kosher cows that were shechted that week. Hmm. So there was a shortage of meat for that particular Shabbat. So a gevir, a certain wealthy individual, knew about the Orach Chaim, that he had a cow, and he gave out meat to the Torah scholars. So he went over and he went and knocked on his door. Said, "Do you have any extra meat?" But the Orach Chaim was very, very careful to make sure that he had enough meat for all these Torah scholars. And he said, "Listen, that's really designated. I've designated all this meat to these individuals who come by, and they're expecting that these Torah scholars, this has been my commitment for the years. So he apologized. I just can't provide the meat for everybody. I apologize." So the gevir, the word gevir means the wealthy individual, right? He was very upset. He didn't take it very, very well. And then at that moment, a particular Torah scholar came knocking on the door for his meat, right? He comes in, he was a young man in his 20s, and he was a Torah scholar in the Kollel Yeshiva. And the Orach Chaim gave him the piece of meat, which he promised to give to him. And this gevir was incensed at the fact that this young, nobody is coming in. He's a Torah scholar, he's a Talmud Chacham. And he's incensed at the fact that the Orach Chaim is giving this piece of meat to him. And he, "Why, I'm a gevir, look at me, I'm a chashuv person, you should be giving the meat to me." And he was upset with this. And he disparaged the Torah scholar. He said, "Why are you giving it to him, this, nobody? And the Orach Chaim was silent. He was silent. He didn't say anything. And he went ahead and just gave the members, "I apologize." And the gevir left very angry, right? He was very upset. But because he didn't stand up, he didn't stand up for the honor of this Torah scholar. I mean, he gave the meat to him, but he didn't disparage. He didn't reprimand the gevir for disparaging the Torah scholar. So that night, he had a dream. And in the dream, the Orach Chaim, in the dream, there was a revelation to the Orach Chaim in the dream that because he didn't stand up for the honor of the Torah scholar, he's deservant of galus. He has to go into exile. He's going to, there's a decree in Shemayim that he has to go into exile for the fact that he didn't honor the Torah scholar by standing up against the gevir. So because he realized this, he decided himself that he's going to impose upon himself his own self-exile. Now, it's not a familiar idea, but the people, I think people still do it today. There's a tradition, there's a custom of people when they want to achieve kapara, when they want to do teshuvas or something, they may go around and exile themselves, go from place to place. Like certain people do these long walks in Spain and Portugal. And, it's a feeling of exile, right? Yeah, you heard of that, right?
Yeah, about Australia.
he just came back from it. So the Orach Chaim, so he decided to self-impose exile upon himself. And he decided to go into exile because he really felt bad about the fact that he didn't respond to this gevir's disparaging of this Talmud Chacham. So he imposed exile upon himself, and Motzi Shabbos, after Shabbos, he packs his bags and he goes off and he starts walking around from town to town. And normally how this happens is they would go around anonymously. They wouldn't say, they would go to villages, they'd go around different towns, and they would not say, when they would do this, they wouldn't divulge their identity and say who they were. The truth is that this past Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and I may have told you this, it was a very interesting thing in our shul in Avos Torah in the Northeast. There was a stranger in the shul sitting at the very front of the shul in the far left of the shul. And he had a certain chashuva look to him. He was like long, a black coat and a black, like bekesha, talus over his head, a long beard. And no one knew who he was. He never spoke to anybody. He was there from the morning till the night, from early in the morning in the shul, and he was standing up almost the entire time. and he had the talus over his head, and no one knew who he was. He came in mysteriously. He left mysteriously. He was there for the entire 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, plus Yom Kippur as well. And no one knew who he was. He didn't talk to anyone. So, you know, it was presumed that he was as a kapara, some type of preparation for Rosh Yom Kippur. He was also, you know, in some type of self-imposed exile. But that's the story over there. But with the Or HaChaim, so he went around traveling, anonymously traveling around from village to village around in Morocco somewhere. And so weeks go by, and then one particular Erev Shabbos, he was sitting in a field. He was walking through a field, and he was walking, and he settled down under a tree on an Erev Shabbos. And he started, you know, engrossing himself in learning and his memorizing, thinking about Torah thoughts. And he was contemplating different Torah thoughts. And it happened to be Parshas Bechukosai, this parsha over here. So right now, as we sit here right now, Erev Shabbos, many, many hundreds of years ago, the Or HaChaim was in a field under a tree, meditating upon Parshas Bechukosai. And it was there in that moment that he came up with 42 understandings of this pasuk. When he was meditating upon this on this pasuk, 42 understandings of this particular pasuk. So after he was mechadesh, he originated, understood these 42 different understandings of the pasuk. He went on his way and he came to the local shul. He comes to a shul and he goes in. No one knows who he is. He doesn't divulge his identity. He goes into the shul. And a individual there sees him and he says, you know, where are you going to be for Shabbos? He says, well, I don't have a place for Shabbos. Well, you'll come to me. So this man invited him to his house for Shabbos. And he didn't know who he was. But this man was just like a very kind man. He was looked after him. And he comes in and he comes into his house. And they have the Friday night meal together. And he says to the man of the house, says to the Or HaChaim, he says that, you know, we have a tradition that at the end of the meal, we go to the local Rav, his house, and we have dessert over there. And then we bench over there, and he shares Divrei Torah. The Rav shares words of Torah in the parasha. So we're going to do that. So have in mind that we're not going to bench over here. We're not going to do the grace after meals over here. We're going to go for dessert to the Rav's house. So they get up and they go to the Rav's house. And again, the Or HaChaim is just this, you know, anonymous traveler. No one knows who he really is. And he's sitting there. And the Rav is giving the drasha, giving a shir, giving like a sharing of the Devar Torah. He's sitting there at the head of the table. And the Rav is a very holy man. And he used to, when he would share Divrei Torah, he would go into almost like a trance-like state. And he would meditate himself and think. And it was like his nesham was soaring to the heavens, trying to kind of understand and bring out some very beautiful ideas in the parasha. So closes his eyes, he's meditating in a trance. And then he says, I have... He says, I'm feeling the energy I'm hearing this, the inspiration from Shemayim. I have 14 explanations on the first pasuk of Bechukosai, right? This parasha, that's when it was happening. So he proceeded to explain these 14 explanations. And he says, and this is these 14 explanations are the chidushim of the novelai of the holy Rav Chaim. What's it? Rav Chaim ben Atar, the very holy Rabbi Chaim ben Atar, the Or HaChaim. He said, these are the novelai. And he was, you know, he intuited these chidushim, right? These revelations of these understandings of these psukim that the Or HaChaim had only just himself innovated and come up with earlier in the day, a few hours before this. But already these words had already reached the heavens and it was recognized and received in the Shemayim. And this now rabbi is sitting there and he's like, he's getting a message of these of 14 of these explanations. And he introduces it and he says, these are the holy words of Rav Chaim ben Atar, the holy Rav Chaim ben Atar. Now, Rav Chaim ben Atar, the Or HaChaim was a very humble man. And he couldn't tolerate, someone saying the holy, you know, esteemed Rabbi Chaim ben Atar. So he just piped up automatically. Isn't that a Chaim ben Atar? And he said this public, and the rabbi, he looked at him and says, he said, what? How dare you disparage a great person like that? And the Balabas who brought the Or HaChaim as a guest, he tried to like kind of calm the rabbi down, and they got distracted. They went on, and that was it. That was Friday night. The next day, Shabbos day, he was again, the Or HaChaim is at this man's house. He's still there for the whole of Shabbos. And again, the Balabas says, we're going to go to the rabbi's house again. We have a tradition. We go for the daytime suitor also. And the same thing repeats itself. And the same thing, he said, and the rabbi, meditates, and he says, I have 14 more understandings of this pasuk, 14 more explanations of this pasuk. And again, it comes from the holy Reb Chaim ben Atar, the Kaddish, the holy esteemed Reb Chaim ben Atar. And again, the Or Chaim is sitting there, Chaim ben Atar. And again, the rabbi chastises him, how dare you say that? And again, the balabas calms him down. And this goes, and then they go back home. And then the Shalosh Shuddah is the third meal of the day. And he goes back again, right? They go back again. And the same thing repeats itself. He praises the Or Chaim, Reb Chaim ben Atar, the Kaddish, etc. And again, the Or Chaim says, no, Chaim ben Atar. And at that point, the Rav just lost himself completely. And he says, this is not, is this just not right? This is completely wrong. To disparage a great holy man like this. And he put him into Chayrim, put him into excommunication. And he said, and he demanded this, you know, person who is disparaging the great sage, the Or Chaim, he shouldn't be allowed to be part of. She put him, and they had this thing in a closet, and they locked him in a closet, locked him in a room. They locked him in a room, and again, still the Or Chaim didn't divulge his identity. He's now being locked in a room. Motzi Shabbos Havdalah. There's a horrific storm outside, a terrible storm, a really dangerous storm, and a storm like they'd never seen before. And they were very worried. And no one knows what was going on. So the Rav, he then went to sleep, and in his sleep, how he went to sleep, but he fell asleep, and in his sleep, he had a dream. And in the dream, it was divulged to him, the reason why the storm was happening is because he had you know, locked up the Or Chaim, his famous Reb Chaim ben Atar, the Kaddish Reb Chaim ben Atar. He himself had locked him up in this room inside the shul. And he realized, you know, and they divulged him who he really was, and that he woke up, he goes down, he says, I apologize. He apologized to the Or Chaim. And he says, I'm so sorry. Like, I feel so terrible about it. He says, don't worry about it. I also had a dream. And I also realized this is all happening to me as a kapara for me. It's an atonement for me because this whole thing began because the Or Chaim himself did not defend the honor of that Torah scholar who came to him, who the Gevir disparaged his presence, and he didn't defend his honor. And he realized that's why he was going into exile, to bring kapara to himself for the fact that he didn't defend the honor of this particular Torah scholar. So he said to the Rav, he says, don't worry about it. He said, this is all a kapara for me. It's all happening for a reason, and I deserve this. And it was divulged to me. He says, in my dream, you know, this experience was enough, basically absolved me of my own sin, and I can now go back home, and I don't have to be in exile anymore. And that was the end of the story. That was that's the origin of these 42 explanations on this pasuk. And again, you know, I saw this over here in this article as well, just to tell you, it says the origin of it. It says that we'll begin by introducing it. It says it's presented in a sefer called Shnayim Asa Shifta Yisrael, authored by Rabbi Moshe Yair Weinstock. He heard the story from the brilliant tzaddik, Rabbi Yisrael Yitzhak Reisman Zitzel, a dayan in the holy city of Yerushalayim, who had heard it from one of the leading Kabbalists in Yerushalayim, the divine Rabbi Chaim Shol Dweck, the author of the Eifah Shlema, on the Arizal Zotzeres Chaim. He in turn heard it, had heard the story from his rav and mentor, the esteemed Rabbi Mordechai Weingarten Zitzel, who was the Rav in the base medrash of the Or Chaim HaKadosh Shul in Yerushalayim. So he's tracing it back to the source, right? So it's a very mysterious story, but that's the origin of the... I mean, it's really, you open up the Chumash, and you can see it's really strange, 42 explanations in this first pasuk, right? So let's start going through some of them. I'm not going to go through all 42 of them, but I'll start with before he gets to the 42, I really missed out. Before he gets the actual 42... Let's put the 42 on the shelf, because before he gets to that, he actually has three other explanations on the very first phrase. So it's divided into two parts. There's the first three explanations of one phrase, and then the 42 explanations, which he innovated on that Erev Shabbos. But going to the very first phrase, where it says, in Bechukosai, chok, not phrase, word, because this is talking about the Torah. It's talking about learning Torah, as we said at the beginning. In Bechukosai Telechu, if you go in my laws or my statutes, aka, which equals if you study Torah with intensity. So his question is why is the Torah called a chok? Why is the studying of Torah called a chok? The word chok always refers to a mitzvah without a reason. So it's strange that we would now describe the Torah and the studying of Torah as a chok. So he writes as follows, the Or Chaim, he says, Sheesh ba mitzvah afila lilmud devarim shalomdom pa'amayim shalosh v'hem yudum etzlo. Because there's a mitzvah to learn Torah, even those things you've learned many times before. Even if you know them well, they're well known to you, you still have a mitzvah to learn that anyway. You could know something. You could know something really well, but there's still a mitzvah to learn it anyway. Ki chafetz Hashem be'esek Torah, because Hashem loves and desires involvement in Torah. He loves and desires the involvement in learning. Even something you've learned before, he desires your involvement in the learning. And in that sense, it's a chok. Just do it. The word chukah, chokak, it's ordained. It's ordained. We have to look at this as an ordained activity. And then he continues, and this is a good consolation. Quotes a medrash, ki letam sheyilmud ha'adam Torah b'cheshek tamid. In order for a person to always be learning with enthusiasm, and always have a cheshek and a desire to learn, this is the reason why Gozra Chachmasa, this is the reason why Hashem decreed that a person should forget what he learns. In other words, when we learn and we forget, we feel frustrated, that's a good thing. When you're frustrated because you've forgotten what you learned, ah, what a bracha that is, because now you're going to keep learning. So it's a technique to keep you learning. You always be learning. So the idea is that learning Torah has to be viewed as a chok, as an obligation, as an intrinsic activity. You know, we've spoken before that there are two manners of learning. There are two foci for learning Torah. One focus of learning Torah is in order to know what to do. You have to learn Torah in order to how to do the mitzvahs. You can't do a mitzvah unless you learn the Torah and the laws beforehand. But there's also a purpose to learning unto itself. Even if you never have an opportunity to actually fulfill a particular mitzvah, still learning is an intrinsic mitzvah. There's a tremendous hashpah, a tremendous influence which comes upon a person through learning. It's a very powerful idea. In fact, the Ramchal in Derech Hashem discusses this at length, and he says that the greatest hashpah, the greatest influence, the greatest spiritual divine influence a person can experience in life is learning. Learning Torah provides the greatest spiritual influence more than any other mitzvah. So it has the most powerful, potent energy of influence upon a person, of connection to the divine. As long as a person learns properly and learns with the intention to do. If you learn with the intention to do, a person just learning academically with no intention to do, it doesn't have that same effect. It has an effect because you're learning and you're learning more and it's going to eventually have an impression upon you. But in terms of the special spiritual, you know, aura, the special spiritual power that the Torah has to be able to influence a person, it is contingent upon a person's desire to want to perform as well. But anyway, learning Torah is the, you know, ultimate mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. It's a Talmud Torah Kenegad Kulam, and it's described as a chok as an ordained, regular, decreed activity, regardless of you forgetting it, or because it's that, that's why you forget it. And regardless of you know it as well, you keep doing it anyway. That's number one. That's one explanation. But then he asks, why is the word, if you look at the grammar of the word, chukosai is pronounced as my statutes, plural. My statutes, plural. That's the literal translation, but again, referring to learning Torah. But it's written as a plural word, my statute, a plural word. Yet, if you look at the actual, how it's written as a singular. It's chukosai is actually, if you take the vowels out, it could be pronounced as chukosi, my singular statute. So basically the word it's read as a plural, but it's written as a singular. What's going on over there? So the Yerachaim says, because the Torah is made up of two parts. It's made up of two parts, Torah Shepiksav and Torah Shebalpeh, the written Torah and the oral Torah. And the idea of that's the plurality of the two words. The singular word alludes to the idea that they're merged together. You can't have one without the other. To tell you, ki Torah Shebalpeh, that the Torah Shebalpeh is kalula, is incorporated and embedded inside the Torah Shebiksav, v'sham binyan, and that's where its foundation, that's where it's built from. So the Torah Shebalpeh, Torah Shebiksav, they're one, they're together, they're a unit together, that's also alluded to as well. Another remez in the plurality of the word chukosai is hagisa b'yom v'layla, that a person is supposed to learn Torah day and night. right? That learning Torah has to be done in the nighttime hours and also in the daytime hours. There has to be a set time for learning. A person should set times for learning Torah during the day, daytime hours, but Lila, nighttime hours. And it's written in the singular. It's written as a singular to teach you that those two times have to be in the same day. So I can't say, you know, day one I'm going to learn during the day, and then day two I'm going to learn at night. No, within every single day there has to be two parts to that day: nighttime hours, daytime hours. When a person's learning, very, very important, you know, lesson that a day should begin with learning, should end with learning, sandwich between the pillars of learning every single day. That's another explanation. A third explanation is that the double and the singular, right? The double is learn and teach, learn and share. That's why I said at the beginning, I wasn't joking when I said I'm going to give this class with a lot of energy because you're going to pass it on to the people you're going to speak to. That's part of this, because he says, the Pasuk says, "Lemadatem usomis b'neichem." You have to learn Torah and also teach it to others. And that's the reason why it says chukosai in the plural, because lulmud ulalameid, because the admonition of the warning is learn and teach, lishmo v'lasos, perform and do. As it says, as mitzvosai tishmeru v'asisem, do them, observe them and do them. So you have in the Pasuk plural, singular. So the plural being learning and teaching. That's the plural singular, because that's all part of the it's all part of the mitzvah of learning Torah. They're the introductory explanations of the 42. But then he embarks upon the 42 explanations, and I'll just do a couple of them, right? Just a couple of them. So the first one he explains is this. He says, Buchukosai. He says, "V'tam omro." The reason why it says, and he's focusing actually on telecho, on the going in my mitzvahs, walking. Like, what's the going? What's the concept of going along, walking along? So he says, to tell you, shetzorach la'asik b'torah, that a person should be busy in Torah, afilu b'halichasa, even when you're going, even when you're traveling, when you're on the plane, when you're in the train, when you're taking a walk. In the car, always a person should be learning when he's traveling. Al derech omro, in the same way as it says in the pasuk, uvelechtoch avaderech, as you're walking along the way, lechtoch avaderech v'shachbuch avikmecha ubahavasa yishka tamid, and with one's love, one with love and desire, obsessed with love for the Torah. That's the idea. So that's the telechel, going, walking with Torah, learning it on the way as well. That's one explanation. That's the first one of the 42. The second one of the 42, a very, you know, a famous one as well. He says, he quotes a Medrash Rabbah about David HaMelech. He said, David HaMelech said about himself, "Chishabti derochai, I calculated my ways." He said, "Shahya David choshev lasis inyanim," because David was thinking about all of the different things he had to do during the day. He had to take care of palace affairs and wars and battles, running away from King Shaul, all the different experiences he had to do. He was all constantly involved in thinking, doing things. Raglav malichim osamatzmal beis medrash, but his feet took him by themselves to the beis medrash. He was on automatic pilot. He was so programmed to learn, so connected to Torah, that his legs brought him by themselves to the base medrash, to the study hall. Because of his tremendous love and desire for regilus bedava and his habituating himself in learning, he would just automatically go. I always liken this to you stretch a rubber band, right? If I have a rubber band over here, in this spot over here, and you stretch it here, what happens? It springs back, or a spring, you know, springs back. No matter what direction you stretch it to, it always springs back when you let go. That's the idea. The concept is to develop ourselves to a point that we're so attached and so in love with Torah, right? That even if I have to go and help somebody, I have to go shopping, I have to go to the doctor, I have to go to shul, I have to do this, that, and the other. I have to do those things, and you're responsible to do those things. You're obligated to do those things. You have to even stop learning in order to do other mitzvahs. You have to do that. That's your obligation. However, as soon as it's over, by the snap of a finger, I spring back. I just spring back to the base medrash. I just go back automatically. So that's the medrash about David HaMelech. Tremendous desire, love, automatically goes back. And that's what it says in B'chukosai Telecho. If you go in my mitzvahs, or if you go in my learning of Torah, what does it mean? Halichasacha miatzmo, your going is automatic. By itself, automatically, if you in B'chukosai Telecho, automatically you spring back. Kamayma David, like David HaMelech, Lerov HaChesek, because of his tremendous love and his regularity. So all of these, let's just see if there's one more, because I have another. So 42, I didn't mark off anymore, but there's 40 to go, right? So I can tell you where this is. It's in chapter, well, you know where it is now already. So question is, why 42? Well, what's the number 42? Like, is that arbitrary? He just, you know, he was sitting there and eventually fell asleep after 42 under the tree when he was coming up with these 42 explanations. What's the significance of the 42 explanations? Why is that the number that he came up with? This is very, very beautiful. So I saw this in this essay by Rabbi Pinchas Friedman, the Shvile Pinchas. He's has a lot of, I think he's the Bobov at the one of the Hasidic Rebbes, lives in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, he suggests the number 42, right, comes up again in several weeks from now in Parshas Maaseh. Mm. Parshas Maaseh, the end of Bamidbar, In Parshas Maaseh, the end of Bamidbar. So open right to the place. Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael. These are the journeys of the children of Israel, Asher Yotzei Me'eretz Mitzrayim, who came out of Mitzrayim, according to their legions, B'yad Moshe V'Aaron, V'yichta Moshe Es Matzeyim, and Moshe wrote down the locations of where they came to in their journey. So these are the journeys. If you count up how many journeys they went through, 42. There are 42 encampments altogether. The 42 encampments, and it's also alluded to in the actual, the second and third word of the parasha, Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael. Maaseh B'nei, the first letter of Maaseh is Mem. First letter of B'nei is Beis. Mem Beis is 42. Mm. So there are 42 journeys that the Jewish people traveled. What's the significance of 42? Like, again, it's the same question. I've connected the 42 interpretations and B'chukosai Telecho with the 42 journeys of the Jewish people in the desert. Okay, it doesn't really answer the question. What else bears the number 42? What else bears the number 42? So the other thing which bears the number 42 is the 42-letter name of Hashem. Mm. There's one of the names of Hashem is 42 letters, and we actually recite this. Some do it every day, but we're going to do it tonight in the prayer Ona B'Koach on Friday night in Kabbalah Shabbos. Kabbalah Shabbos, there's a prayer Ona B'Koach right before L'chodidid. So in that prayer, there's an allusion to the 42 letters of Hashem's name. So there's something very, very holy and mystical about the number 42. 42 encampments, 42 letters, 42 letters of Hashem's name. But to understand it, is really, you have to really go back to this idea of the 42 encampments. So commentaries say, you know, a few commentaries I saw to talk about this, that the 42 encampments really symbolize the constant journey and the experience of every human being in their lifetime. So the commentary is right that every person, I think this is, I'm going to read this from one of them, is from the Shlach Kodesh, right? The Shlach Kodesh says, the journeys are like exiles. They're like exiles and they afford atonement. Also, someone who moves his feet and transports himself to a place of Torah and goes to study, his journey is ordained, and that's something else, that's a side, that's not to do with this. But I'm reading the wrong part, let me read this again, find the right part over here, give me a second, sorry. Wrong paragraph. Sorry. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. The Degel Machna Ephraim presents in the name of his renowned elder, of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, a fascinating concept. Every Jew, without exception, in the course of his lifetime, from the day of his birth until the day of his death, passes through the desolate wilderness of Olam Hazav, this world. In the process, he completes the very same 42 journeys that Yisrael, the Jewish people, traveled in the desert. Ultimately, he merits entering the land of the living in the world of the Neshamas. So there's a concept we all go through 42 encampments or 42 exiles, because you know the encampment. See, it's interesting. It doesn't say Eila Machanos. It says Eila Masse. Right? Machanos is the encampment. Mm. So the translation says accurately, these are the journeys. So what's the most important part, the journey or the encampment? The journey, right? You know that, right? The journey is the most important part, right? It's the journey between those encampments. And he says everyone goes through. So the purpose of those journeys is the kapara, which is achieved in that exile. It's a very, you know, these are big ideas and such important ideas, because whatever challenge we are going through in our life, that is our exile, and that is our kapara, and that is our avenue to success and greatness. That's our avenue. That's a, you know, we look at the challenges as a foe. The challenges are our friends. Challenges are not our foe. They are our friends. They are the pathway and the avenue towards reaching a new machana, reaching a new encampment, reaching a new level of growth, of personal growth. It's such an interesting thing. You know, you got to hold on to it. Got to hold on to this difficulty I'm in right now, this hardship I'm going through right now. This is my masse. That's my masse. That's my journey. This is my exile. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever calculated and added up how many they've gone through in their lifetime. But I think 42 is definitely, sounds like a good number. It sounds like, you know, it suddenly covers a lot of experiences. And obviously, every tiny little experience is going to be a difficulty. But obviously, there are certain things which really do stand out and become more significant in a person's lifetime. This is my masa. This is my, not encampment, this is my present exile right now. And there are 42 journeys like that, that the neshama has to go through 42 stages before it gets to its destination. And the 42 stages, those 42 steps, those 42 exiles are accompanied with one of the letters of Hashem's name. So the 42 letter name of Hashem is really a template or superimposed upon the 42 exiles that a person goes through during his lifetime to get to his final destination, to get to the final place of Matan Torah, of the where we really do become totally connected with Hashem at HaSinai. I'm saying figuratively, coming close to Hashem, coming to the Shemayim, then the Shema goes back, where we become fused with the Kodesh Baruch Hu once again. And now we understand a little bit better now why the Urachayim came up with the 42 Pshatim of this Pasuk. What is this Pasuk telling us? It's telling us the most important mitzvah about how to become free and how to experience the ultimate madrega of life. Gemara says, there's no free, no one is as free as somebody who is osek in Torah. The key to freedom, the key to fighting the Yetzirah, the key to fighting the forces of evil is involvement in Torah. Of course, it goes without saying, the fulfillment of the mitzvahs too, but it starts off with the amelis in Torah. It starts off with the toiling in Torah. That's the antidote. That's the protection. That's the armor we have to be able to fight the challenges of whatever exiles we're going through. This is happening right now before Shavuos, right? Parshas Bechukos, the Gemara says, the Parshas Bechukos specifically is arranged to be right before Shavuos. Now, it's not right before Shavuos. We've got next week, which is the Parshas Bar Midbar. Why is it a week earlier? Now, why is it actually supposed to be before Shavuos? Well, so the Gemara says the reason is because in the Parsha as well, is the section of the rebukes and the curses as well, and the warnings that if you know don't follow mitzvahs, then all these terrible things are going to come about. So the Gemara says we want to get rid of that before the end of the year. Before the end of the year, what before the end of the year? So the Gemara says that Shavuos is another beginning of a year. Shavuos is the Rosh Hashanah for trees, for the fruit on the trees. Shavuos coming up in a couple of weeks now is the Rosh Hashanah for the fruit of the trees. And we want to make sure that before this Rosh Hashanah begins, you want to clear out all of the curses. So that's why the Gemara says, Ezra the scribe, or organized for Parsha Bechukosai to be before Shavuos, to clear it, to make sure all the curses are over with. Why is it not right before Shavuos? We don't want to have such a like juxtaposition of the curses to Shavuos. So there's a buffer parsha, a Parsha B'Midbar in between. But the idea is, b'chukosai is the last, it's supposed to be this way, the last parasha before Shavuos. That's one reason why it leads up to Shavuos. But the other reason is, for this reason here, because this parasha is sending us the message that, and teaching us the lesson of toiling in Torah, and also realize and toiling in Torah, and then with the Or HaChaim's 42 explanations of this pasuk, understanding that all of the challenges and all of the exiles which we go through are all leading us towards that final redemption. We left Mitzrayim several weeks ago. We left Mitzrayim stage one. We're still journeying. You know, the Jewish people historically are still journeying. They're not totally free. They're free of Mitzrayim, but they're still in exile. They're still in the desert. They haven't reached Har Sinai to receive the Torah yet. So we're also in that same space right now. We are in the final stage towards Har Sinai. And the lesson of the 42 is we have to go through exile and difficulties to get to that final destination. So this is how the Or HaChaim understand. This is the deeper understanding of these 42 messages. But you know, many ideas over here. But you know, we have to always remind ourselves, whatever challenges we're going through, whatever difficulties are, they are the necessary exiles to bring out our greatness, to bring out, as they say, the netzotzos of kedusha, the sparks of holiness, which are latent in every single experience. And the way to do that, one of the major ways, if not the major way to do that, is toiling and putting out effort in the studying of Torah.